We're just about to start, so we're letting people arrive. We've got about 80 people so far. There's seven of us on the panel here. Ah, people from all over here: Holland, Austria, Northern Ireland, Detroit, Oregon, Yorkshire. That's where I'm from. Alaska, Cambridge. So we're up to 100 now. We'll just wait a bit more. A few more minutes, and then I'll get the panelists to introduce themselves just briefly. It's all an experiment. We haven't done this before. And we had a big argument just before we started. Or was that just in my no-head? Oh, we've started. Oh. Okay. Excellent. Let's get at it. Oh, okay. So we're going to introduce ourselves. So Amir, do you want to say just something about you and then we'll go around?
Yeah. My name is Amir. I've been involved in contemplating or seeing half years now, and I live here in London.
Okay, great. Jade?
Hi. I was introduced to the Headless Way by Amir, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. And yeah, I'm also from London. So yeah, hi.
Brilliant. Okay. And John?
Hi there. I'm John. I live near Oxford in the UK. And next December, it'll be half a century of seeing who I am. I met Douglas when I was 21.
57. All right, thank you. Hank, you're in the middle there for me.
Hi, I'm Hank. I live in Portland, Oregon in the States, and I've been enjoying Headlessness for a number of years. Highly recommended.
Okay. Judy.
Hi, everyone. I'm in South Wales in the UK, in the Gower Peninsula, near Swansea. And I think I can top John's. I met Douglas in 1968, so that is a good number of years ago. And on and off, I've been enjoying the Headless Way ever since. I think the most important thing to remember is it's new every day for everybody.
Brilliant. Thank you, Judy. Karen?
Hi, everyone. Hi, I'm in the Netherlands, Lelystad, a little place nobody knows, except a few friends here. And I discovered the Headless Way about 9 years ago, I think, and after a long search of decades, and it brought me home within a few weeks, at least, straight away. But I realized this was the end of the search. That took me a few weeks. Ever since, it has been the center of my life.
Brilliant. So if you've got questions, use the Q&A. Jade and Amir in particular are going to keep an eye on that, rather than chat, because the chat just gets sort of more or less lost after, you know, it's moving so fast. All right, so questions in the Q&A, but I'll just start, kick off by just raising a question. So what does the Headless Way do for you? These are all my friends, so I'm very happy to hang out with them. We all share seeing, we're all equal in the space, as we are with you too. Well, let me just kick us off by saying, just notice you can't see your own head, everybody. And in fact, you could just point. So I'm going to point. You know, it's a very good way of bringing our attention to what we're on about, which is the place you're looking out of, where you don't see your face. Instead, you see the finger in the world. And that is it. And so that's what we're on about. That's what we're celebrating and sharing. And that's what we've all got in common. And we've all got different reactions to it. So, John, what is seeing who you really are doing for you at the moment? These days, as it were, what comes out of the void when I ask that question?
Okay, so so whatever I'm doing, okay, I see these hands moving around, I see my legs, I see my body, I see all the world passing through me, when I'm driving a car, the roads flying into this space. And I play a lot of football, okay, since retiring. I play 6 hours of football and basketball a week. And it's amazing but I see my arms and I see the other bodies and people arise from here and from there and the ball whizzes past and it's all action in this still central space. Okay. And that's what life's like for me, and it's great fun. And it's especially fun sharing it.
Thank you, John. Amir and Jade, any questions that we should address, do you think?
There's a question. Once one understands, just a quick technical one, is this going to be recorded? And yes, it's being recorded. But a headless question is, once one understands or gets the experiments, headless experiments, can the experience be deepened in any way? Or is there nothing more to be, I'm not sure it's meant to say seen or deepened? Yeah, deepened.
Deepened. All right, great. All right. Okay. So I can see everyone on the panel. So just put your hand up if you want to respond to that. Can the experience be deepened? All right, Judy.
Well, I was going to say something to the, what does it do for you as well? Because I was thinking that what I'm doing here, sitting here, is actually waiting for something to pop into this mind in answer to the question. And this is the deepening part, because not all that long ago, I would have been totally freaked out at the thought of doing this, completely paralyzed at the thought of being here and trying, as I thought it would be, to think of something intelligent to say, and desperately worried that I might appear completely sick and useless. And that is not happening, which is a really great relief. And it began happening. I know I said that I met Douglas and saw this for the first time. Won't tell you how many years ago. Hopefully you've forgotten what John said. But I found that the shyness, the self-consciousness, did begin to dissipate straight away. And it also began a process of getting more confident at speaking and in public, and being okay at not knowing an intelligent and clever thing to say, and just waiting for this clarity here to come up with something hopefully relevant. So that is one of the things that it's made a huge difference in my life. And there are other things we might get round to later.
Okay. And Amir and Jay, do feel free just to jump in with any questions, because we can always come back to some of these things. So another question is, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoop, Jade, you're toxic.
I don't know what's happening. But the question is, have you found the experience of seeing to be more continuous over the years, from Samuel?
Okay, more continuous over the years. Who'd like to answer that one? All right, Karen, I can see everyone, and Karen just raised her hand, so you're on.
I'm on, yes, continuous. So I think what happened for me is that I'm remembering it more often. It's always, in a way, there is no continuity. There is no continuous thing, because as Judy said, or John said already, it has to happen each moment. So there, you can't see by memory or anything. But what can happen is, especially in moments that are difficult or stressed, or life is really not pleasant or whatsoever, is that I remember it quicker, and I can reassure you. And this experiment, just putting my hands behind my head, is one of my favorite experiments, actually, maybe since you're all there, maybe we can all do it together, just seeing your hands and slowly moving them behind your head. And then seeing for myself again, proving for myself that these hands really disappear into a nothing. And in this nothing, everything dissolves, the stress, the problems, even my person. And to remember this quicker and to help myself see, especially doing an experiment, that creates for me a continuity, whatever, you know what I mean. A continuum, kind of continuum experience.
Thank you. Oh, Hank, yes.
Yes, I found the frequency of noticing that I can't see my own face increases. Similar to what Karen's saying, it happens more often, I remember more readily. It's not continuous because it doesn't necessarily mean I'm remembering for longer periods of time or that it remains continuous throughout the day, but the frequency increases. And there are times where the frequency is, the intervals between remembering and forgetting are so short that it seems more continuous.
Okay, John, and then we'll look at another question, all right?
Thank you. What I find is two things going on here. One is you're noticing you can't see your own face, and you're noticing this vastness here. And that doesn't happen all the time because you're busy doing stuff and you're thinking about stuff and stuff's happening. But what does happen all the time for me, I would report, is a change of identity. I may not be thinking about the experiments or thinking about this amazing space and the contents and the well-being inside me, all those things, but my identity is this capacity. That is my identity. That's what I relate to, rather than relating to John, who I also am for the world, of course, but it's a shift of identity, which is there all the time for me. Thanks.
Great, thanks. Jade or Amir, any questions there you see that stand out?
The headless way, two-way seeing, which I suppose is this experiment, looking out colors and shapes at the same time as looking in the emptiness or void. Is there also two-way feeling and two-way thinking?
I'll briefly answer, then see, you know, if someone else wants to. Yes, absolutely. The visual is a way in. You asking the question, who am I? So you look, and you look to see what you are. And I find no face here. I find space for the world. And then I pay attention to sounds, and the sounds are happening in the silence here. That's sound to silence. Thoughts to no thoughts. Sensations in the absence. So once you get into the void, then you look out into all the senses. I get more aware of my body, my sensations and my thoughts, not less. So the two-way question. Yeah, anyone else want to respond to that?
I think of it as two-way attention. That's kind of the umbrella term that I use for myself. And that encompasses feelings, thoughts, what I'm seeing visually, what I'm hearing. And when I use the term seeing, I guess I use it as an umbrella term, similarly, to encompass thoughts, feelings, sensations. That's all seeing. Seeing is not something I'm doing with my eyes. Seeing is something that I'm doing with my attention. And I just use the word seeing to categorize that or to encompass it.
Thank you. And just to, before Amir comes with another question, just to say that what we're sharing here is just being aware of this open space we're looking out of. And we're absolutely convinced you're looking out in the same openness, but you got a different view out. So this is kind of a meeting of equals, really. Yeah. So Amir?
There's a few really great questions coming in, but I wonder if this is a good one just to start with, in case there's more than one person who has it, saying that they and their boyfriend have just joined and they don't know much about it. Can you describe the concept a little bit?
Very good. All right. Okay, Judy.
Well, I really don't think that you can describe the concept. I think that is something to get really straight immediately, because it's not a concept. There are concepts which come from this experience, but first and foremost, it's definitely an experience, something you notice. And in my case, it is firmly embedded in seeing, the sense of sight, the vision, visionary sense, and noticing that what's looking is not a thing here. When I look to see what might be here, I don't find any kind of thing. I find all those things out there at this moment, the faces on the screen and the room and all the colors and shapes. But here, where my attention, as Hank said, is coming from, is transparency, emptiness or nothingness or God or whatever you want to call it, you know, the source, I should say. It's a well-known fact that all those words can't be described. You can't put them into words. You can only point, as we just did, point in both directions, point this way. And we talk a lot, we all talk a lot, but what we're actually doing is describing as best we can our own experience, or pointing to our own experience, knowing that other people have the same experience and are trying to talk about it. But to put the experience into words, I don't think is possible.
I'm going to jump in and just respond to that and just say, well, when you're looking at my face, notice you can't see your own face at the same time. And even though you feel sensations, be aware of the sensations, they don't actually make up a visible face in the way of my face. So we call this face to no face. I am built open for you, you're built open for me. This is so practical. I mean, it's so obvious. I can't see my face. I'm looking at my face on the screen, but I don't have one here, and I'm built open. And the space itself is neutral, but with respect to relationships, it's profoundly welcoming. I have your face now instead of my own. I am room for you. This is a beautiful, respectful, loving thing. And we all need to wake up to this, I would say, and balance the objective view, which is face to face, where we're separate, which is all true, balance that with our actual experience, which was we're built open for each other. I mean, that needs to get around. We're built open for each other. I am you. You know, this needs to come onto the front burner in the species, in society. I feel very strongly. All right. Karen.
Yeah, and I like the question, the concept, because why I fell for the headless way that it's the greatness about it is the experiments, and there are no concepts at all. There are so many spiritual approaches that try to bring something across through concepts, and you either believe them or you don't believe them, or you try to understand them, or you know, you meditate for weeks or years over them and maybe get an inkling. But with these experiments, that goes further than any verbal concept. You just look. And you look and you see. And the only problem is to leave your memory and your assumptions behind, and have this fresh, childish look and to see what's actually on show. So that's what I love so much about this approach.
Thank you, Karen. Any other questions, Amir or Jade?
What advice would you have for a 10-year-old just learning the headless way?
Well, what do you think, Jade?
Well, okay. I would say like what Judy was saying, it's more nonverbal and like doing the exercises and point noticing where you're looking from is kind of the key. Instead of trying to explain it with words, it's more just to emphasize that it's experience.
Perfect. Yes, Karen.
Yes, for a 10-year-old, I would say just have fun with it. You know, the here where you don't see your head, you can be anything. So start playing whatever you like. And who says it's not true? There's nobody who can say it's not true, because for you at that moment, you can be anything. It's not, of course, the responses that you will get from society or the people around you, but for yourself, you can play lovely with being headless.
Judy?
I would think that a 10-year-old is much nearer to this experience than we older people, who've got so many more ideas about what we are and what we look like. And that the best benefit to a 10-year-old is to do the experiments and say, yeah, you're right, that, like that, and don't let anybody put you off. I also think it's part of life and very absolutely essential that we should learn to see ourselves as other people see us, even though that causes us a load of problems. It also undoes a lot of problems too, which of living with other people. So it's a very absolutely essential part of the process of one's journey. It's journey these days, isn't it? We're all on journeys. But the 10-year-old is so near to have been in that blessed state of being open all the time, that of a small child, and I'm sure hasn't forgotten. So, yeah, great. But getting ahead is also part of it. In other words, recognizing that that's what other people make of you, and they have a view, and to take account of that fact that you have an appearance for other people.
Thank you, Judy. Sorry I interrupted. John, you were a headmaster for years. What do you think?
Okay. Children get it easier than adults, but they also move on quicker. So they will, they will get it, but they're interested in the next thing that's going to happen, because they haven't had a whole life of convincing themselves that they are what they look like. They haven't had a life of, in imagination, going outside and looking back at themselves and feeling kind of, you know, trapped and embarrassed and on show and looked at. So they perhaps don't have the motivation that adults might have to find that liberation again. And it's probably worth, you know, mentioning that when one is with a very young child, you know, a baby, you've only got to look at their face and you can see that they're absolutely wide open and they have no concept. If you look at a baby looking at their hand, they just see it drift across as a thing in the world. It's the thing in the world. But they don't realize that they are a thing in the world. And even when they see themselves in the mirror, they see the baby out there in the mirror, and they sometimes try to go around the back of the mirror and find this child, you know, to play with. So children get it easier, but they move on because they're less motivated than we are.
Thank you, John. Brilliant. I think there's lots of great questions. Amira and Jay, this is fantastic to having all these questions. Thank you.
Yeah, really great questions. So apologies if we don't get to all of them. I'll do my best to potentially initially pick ones that have the broadest, that I'm going to assume have the broadest interest. But this seems to have been voted up, so I'm understanding that people can vote certain questions up. So there's a question here for Maria. I was wondering if you could elaborate how using the headless way can evoke happiness or joy. I've struggled a lot in my spiritual journey, but been attracted to the headless way because I understand how to manipulate my perspective through the headless technique, but I don't understand how to use that to invite happiness or joy.
Great question. I'm going to just respond quickly. on the one hand, I don't think it is about sort of going for results, but we all want results, of course. But I would say for me, it's basically about finding out the truth about me. But we're all complicated, and, you know, I want to feel good and feel loved and loving. And I think that if you practice the headless way with people and see you're out of the way and you're face to no face, this is the basis of love. And well, there are, I'm going to hand it over in a moment, but there are a million ways in which this awareness who you really are blesses you. But you've got to do it. And you've got to do it through the times when it doesn't bless you, because it's true. All right. Someone else want to hand up? Oh, no. Well, just attend. Oh, Judy. Yeah, Judy.
When I think about this, I think that in my experience, most of my unhappiness, not all, of course, but most, comes from this idea that I'm some kind of thing, a person who is not good at being a person, that my misery is associated with my meanness. And what this does is wipes that clean. It wipes out my preoccupation with myself as Judy. And this is quite a long process, deepening process. And it doesn't work all the time. I still get caught up in an argument. I still get, if I'm severely criticized, I get hurt and wounded and angry. But over time, I have learned to come here and be open to whatever's going on. And those hurt and rejecting feelings don't come up in the way that they did. When I'm being clear, they don't come up. And I'm constantly so delighted with this fact that it in itself, it brings happiness. I also think that just being clear and accepting the world and as it's given is a source of enormous happiness. It's saying yes to things, to events and people, rather than no. And that makes one happy.
Thank you, Judy. Anyone else like to respond to that? Okay, another question?
Hi. So does the experience of headlessness improve like a skill, like playing a guitar or learning a sport? Or is it a one-off insight that you can access at any time after your first experience of it?
And what, no, guys, this is awesome. Do you think, Jane?
Richard. I think there's nothing to improve because it just is. That's what it feels like. It feels that when you notice it, it's there, and you can't improve what is just is, as I was saying. That's what it feels like to me.
I think what Jade said was just very right on, really. Yeah, it's just being yourself. I mean, it includes the view out, where you're learning all kinds of things all the time, and being empty for the view out improves your effectiveness at learning skills, you know, learning the piano or learning any skill. When you're out of the way, you're attending, you're present. You're including it. When I'm speaking now, my voice, I'm noticing, is coming out of nowhere. I don't know what it's going to say next. It's always been like that. That's nothing new. But now I'm noticing it's just mysteriously coming out of the silence. Now, how wild is that? You know, so the most ordinary things become creative and exciting and mysterious and just talking, just thinking. You know, imagine a blue pyramid now. Well, that just pops up in the great void, doesn't it? I mean, how do you do that? It's just... okay. Yeah. I'm enthusiastic. All right. Hank?
I think seeing is a skill in the sense that noticing is a skill. It's something that can be developed through familiarity. When I'm walking down the street, I don't notice flowers because I have no real familiarity with them. I haven't practiced it. So flowers all look the same to me. I don't notice it. I just don't notice them. But I'm a musician. So when I'm in a restaurant, I'm listening to the music, whatever's coming out of the speakers, wherever I am, in a cafe, in an elevator, I'm always noticing what's going on. I'm noticing the chord progressions. I'm noticing all that stuff. But a non-musician wouldn't be noticing that. A gardener would be noticing flowers. So in the sense that you notice that you can't see your own face, the more familiar you are with that experience, the more you repeat that experience, the more you notice you can't see your own face by familiarity. So in that sense, it's not a perfect analogy, but in that way, it is analogous to learning a skill, learning how to notice flowers, learning how to notice chord progressions, learning how to notice what cars are driving down the street, if you're interested in cars, whatever it is, learning to notice that you can't see your own face.
And I'll add to that, that it is infectious. And that's why we like hanging out together, because it's just like infectious. You know, it's just the simplest thing, but we're all seeing the same space. I don't understand the mechanics of it, but, you know, it's just wonderful to share with friends. Anyone else want to answer that question? Oh, okay, Karen.
Yeah, it's such a lovely paradox here again, like seeing is full of paradoxes. Like Yates says, you can't improve on seeing, you can't improve this moment when I see. And it's also what Hank says, that seeing does have a kind of a skill in it. And then I come back to what John says, like stepping back into this first identity. You know, I can become more skillful at that in the sense that I remember it more often. And as Hank says, it's more familiar to me. And I can get, as I developed as a personality very skillfully, unfortunately, you can say, due to, you know, the pressure of society, I can also skillfully develop back, in the sense I am, of course, my first identity already all the time, but realizing it more clearly and living from it. Yeah, you can practice that. That helps a lot.
Thank you, Karen. Any other questions, Amir, that catch your attention?
Yeah, I thought I could share quickly my perspective on that.
Yes.
Last question, which it doesn't, my experience of it hasn't been like learning a guitar, but it has been, there were some experiments that made sense to me straight away, and there were some experiments that suddenly after 2 years I got for the first time. There's an experiment about looking for distance, and it never made any sense to me until maybe a month ago. Or there was one we did last week about time. And so while I saw very quickly there's nothing here, but there's aspects of it which I, there's what seems to be continuously new aspects which I find appreciation for or that I notice, for example, that it's timeless. So it doesn't feel like a skill, but there seems to be an endless well of realizations that can be had, or at least I haven't come to an end of them. So, but maybe some people get it all straight away. There's a question from Adam that's been voted.
They don't. Sorry, go on, question.
So this is an interesting one. Please, could you talk about the difficulties you experienced during the transition? You mentioned previously that you experienced anxiety and panic attacks. I'm assuming that's on the Sam Harris interview. I went through a similar difficulty during transition. There were several occasions where I was in the middle of, say, addressing an audience during a work meeting, and I'd completely lose my sense of depth and self. I'd be stuck between two worlds. Interested to hear your thoughts on transition difficulties.
Okay, that's a good question. I think for me personally, transition difficulties go on for the rest of my life. I don't think I'm through it yet. And I think that this is wonderful, I mean, challenging and difficult, because if you imagine that you see who you are and then suddenly everything's fine and there are no more problems and you're home and that's it, I mean, well, whether you want that or not, I don't want that. It's not like that. And life is one transition after another. There, here, it nothing changes. So this is a skill, isn't it, of in the present moment, applying awareness of being capacity for the situation and finding out what happens. But be kind with yourself. You know, life is difficult, you know, and don't give yourself a hard time if you're having a hard time. But what we're here to really encourage you to do is the two-way attention while you're having a hard time. And also, obviously, talk to friends, things like that. Someone else feel like responding to that question? Just what comes out of the void?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of confusion, isn't it? That everybody, as someone said, is on a plan. You know, we treat ourselves like a project and treat ourselves like project managers. You know, we're going to develop and attain things. But this isn't like that. This is a, you know, a one-off epiphany. It's an epiphany to me. You know, once you get it, you get it, you get it. And although, you know, you still have problems coming in. Someone said to me once, how come if I'm paying attention to who I really am, that I keep getting bitten by insects and I want to scratch them, but I know I mustn't scratch them, kind of thing. So why is this bad thing happening to me? Well, you know, the insects don't know that you're seeing who you really are. You know, they're still going to bite you. Your taste the same as someone else who isn't interested. So we get a kind of confusion of our kind of life project of what's going to happen with John and our true identity as this vastness. And as far as we were talking about a minute ago, does it ever stop that you keep, you know, Amir's point about timelessness? That keeps happening. That happens to me every single day. Every single time I go on a Zoom meeting, I hear something new from someone like Hank, which is absolutely brilliant. And it's changed me, you know, to hear it put in that way. So the realizations just go on and on and on. And there's absolutely no beliefs. It's not a belief system. You won't find any beliefs amongst any of us that you've got to memorize and, you know, and adhere to. It's just not like that. It's about a continual discovery of this amazing identity and reality.
Thank you. Any other questions there? Or, I mean, please, if anyone wants to respond, just put your hand up. I can see everyone on the panel. Karen.
Yes. And I like to add that in a strange way, the pains and hurts and confusion of myself and but also of the world comes in more. In a way, I've noticed I've become more sensitive for them and, you know, hit me harder. And I've been wondering about it. Maybe it's because, you know, I put up less defenses and don't cling to anything so much as I did in the past, maybe. But in a way, they're bearable or it's all right because I see they're all coming from this. They're embedded in the space. And it's strange. It's another of those paradoxes. You think, oh my God, you know, it will be happy and good forever, but not so. But it's all right. It's really all right.
Thank you, Karen. More questions, Amir? We've got about 10 minutes left, so we are moving along here.
Maybe I can combine two questions and people can, I'll just call out two and then maybe the panel can answer ones that speak to them. One is like, what are the best exercises to practice from a practical perspective? And then one's, I get the feeling, the impression that in headlessness, I'm unlearning so many associations I have made. In particular, the way the mind has built a map up of my body. It's somewhat disconcerting, almost a childlike fearfulness of what to make of it. How do you address the rising up of fears?
Thank you. All right. Well, I'll start off and see what comes out of the void. And if anyone else wants to say something, raise your hand. So one was, how do you deal with the fears? And what was the first one?
The first one is, what's the best exercise to practice on a practical level?
Okay. I think for me, it's different every day. And let me kind of reiterate something here, that the experience is nonverbal and you can't get it wrong. And we've all got it, everybody here. No one can see their face, instead they see the world. So I think, either pointing is just, that gets me looking rather than just thinking about it. And or being with someone and just seeing I'm open for them. And even though I've got all my sensations here that I call my face, it does not get in the way. It's part of the content of awareness. And this is deep. And this is never-endingly practical. And we need this. So I would really say, because you'll find, when you are aware that you're face to no face with someone, living it, the whole relationship begins to change. I mean, how can it not? Yeah. All right. So, and the fear thing for me is, well, the same, fear to no fear, face to no face, fear to no fear, and fear will come and go. So who else on the panel is want to respond, see what comes out of the great void? Or are you afraid? Oh, Judy.
I like Richard, I find that the favorite experiment, the flavor of the month, as you might say, varies, it changes. One that just came up, it's quite new for me, actually. Not really new, it's just that I'd overlooked it. Came up on one of our Zoom meetings not long ago, and it's just a simple thing of drinking my morning tea and noticing that it goes straight down into the it disappears into the void. And I take great delight in this one. And another one is the embracing the world. When I stretch these arms right out wide and see that they're big enough to encompass the whole room at this moment and all of you. I just love that one. It's so vivid. That here is the capacity for what's seen at this moment and for everything that is. And I find that is sort of mind-blowing, and it's great. And then, of course, there's just this, somebody said not one of our meetings again, you can do this without anybody noticing what you're doing. You could be just sort of scratching the back of your no head or something like that, but you can do this anywhere really, and you don't look too odd, whereas going around like this might be a bit noticeable.
Hank.
Yes, from a practical perspective, when I'm out and about, I find, for practice, I find face to no face, and also what we call seeing through your single eye, which is simply noticing that when you look out, you're not looking out of, you don't have the experience of looking out of two eyes. You have the experience of looking out of a big, almost infinite, borderless window. So those two things from strictly practical point of view, when I'm out and about, are what I practice, because I don't want to walk around doing this or walking around with a big cardboard tube affixed to my face. And as Judy said, this kind of thing, you can do some things inconspicuously, but from a practical standpoint, those are my two favorites.
Thank you, Hank. So we've got 5 minutes. John?
Can I drop in a commercial? Okay, so people are asking about practical, ideas, ways of paying attention to this. So if you go on the website, There's a Zoom meeting that I've been offering on a Monday at 8 o'clock UK time. And in that Zoom meeting, we spend the whole time doing the experiment. So you might live quite a distance, depending on which part of the planet you're on, from anywhere where there's a live workshop going on. So this gives you an opportunity of taking part and doing the experiments which Hank and Judy and others have been relating to in a setup like this. And it's quite fun. But it is profound fun.
Well, since you've done a commercial, which is brilliant, those Monday evening workshops online free with John, we've just produced the universe model again. And this is on sale. There are a limited number, obviously, unlike the universe. And it shows the layers of your appearance. So at a certain range, a few feet, you're human. But if we go up to you, you're cellular, molecular, right? And going away, you're maybe a city of the planet. So this is really beautiful. This is designed by Douglas Harding in the 1970s. We've reproduced it, which is on the inside. And there's an audio that goes with it. So if you would like one of these fantastic, beautiful, inspiring, you just go to the shop and look on the left on the menu and you'll see Universe Explorer model. So I wasn't muted then, was I?
And I hasten to add, I was using the word commercial for comedic value. Okay? Oh. There is no charge.
All right. So let's just go round. Just a last word from each person, maybe. And my own response here, real delight to hang out with my friends and just get a sense of all of you looking out of one single eye with your different responses and just really heartwarming to connect with you in this one space, which is just so mysteriously undivided in what we all are, you know. So very glad to be here. So who'd like to go next? Just as kind of swan song. John.
I'd like to say the questions have been fantastic. I don't know if the technology has been able to record the questions, perhaps not, I don't know, but I'd like to reflect on them later because I thought they're really penetrating and really productive. So thank you very much for those.
Yeah, just to echo, we've only been able to read out a fraction of the questions. There's lots of really brilliant questions that I would love to hear everyone's opinions on. So if there is a way of capturing them and coming back to them another time, again, apologies if we didn't get to read out your question. There's lots of brilliant questions I've never seen or thought of and something to come back to.
Thank you, Amir. Who'd like to go next? All right, Judy.
It's been a real joy to do this. I feel that there are lots of people out there who are on the same wavelength. And thank you for coming and sharing with this time with us and sharing your same experience that we have. And it's just so great to realize that this is catching on and so many people are thinking, wow, this is great. I want to get to know more of this and I want to be like this more and more of the time. And it's just wonderful. So thanks to everybody.
Thank you, Judy. Karen?
Yes, wonderful. And thanks for the wonderful questions. Just a short recommendation when you're in a stressy time or not a stressy time, go and walk on a path or on the street and see how everything consistently moves through you. And that has done wonders for me in difficult times. Good luck, everybody.
Thank you, Jade. I think I'll do Jade.
Hi. Yeah, thank you everyone as well. Just one more question is how do people find out about the Zoom meetings on Monday? Somebody has asked.
You're muted, Richard.
Okay. Do you want to say anything else just about your own experience here, Jade?
Yes, it's lovely to feel like I'm not the only one in this experience and to have a shared experience with everyone is really great. So thanks for being headless.
Thank you. John, and then Hank, I know. But John, do you want to say something more about those Monday evenings?
Yes, I think I saw the question. I think you need to go on the Headless Way, okay? So headless.org. If you Google a Headless Way, you'll get to the website. And on there, there's Richard's email. So you can contact Richard if you want to be sent the links to all the meetings that happen throughout the week at different points on the planet, which are normal Zoom chat meetings. There's also on the landing page, there's a link through to the Monday ones, which are the experiment-based ones. So thank you.
Thank you. And Hank?
Terrific questions, terrific comments. Thanks to everyone who participated. And take the plunge and attend some of the online meetings.
Wonderful. And just say every so often, I notice someone I know in the chat, Jackie, Annabelle, lots of people that I can't mention now, but just marvelous to have you here and everyone here. So I think we'll do this again and what fun. All right. So go headless. Thank you.